We begin with Ebola. The Pentagon says that American troops have now completed construction of a hospital in Monrovia, Liberia, and are nearing completion of the first of 17 nearby treatment clinics. The Army is manning at least 5 mobile testing laboratories as well. As of this weekend, the Army's 101st Airborne Division will take over command of the U.S. Ebola effort in West Africa, a team of hundreds of civilians and military personnel with a 6-month budget of $750 million. The challenges in West Africa and in the U.S., different and similar. We'll talk about that with Dr. Emmanuel Darcourt, Senior Health Director for the International Rescue Committee, just returned from West Africa within the month. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you.
It seems that we are reaching some sort of inflection point in West Africa where communities and cities and infrastructures are really unable to deal with this in the traditional way. I mean, is it going from linear to nonlinear? I mean, are we really looking at a breakdown of the system in Liberia at this point?
The truth, John, is that the system in West Africa has broken down a long time ago, and that this breakdown is both a consequence but also a cause of Ebola. So the reality is that it's been nonlinear for a while. But I also, after returning from there, have hope that we can control the epidemic, because the things that will control it are not as difficult and complicated as we make them out to be.
Although I think from our perspective in the West, and when we hear from policymakers, they talk about sort of widening the circle of quarantine or isolation or of the place where, you know, relief infrastructure and troops are poured in. Can we do that? I mean, can we really just continue to widen? Pretty soon we're talking about drawing a circle around West Africa itself.
The truth about outbreaks, and it's true of this particular outbreak in West Africa, but it's been true of outbreaks in the past, is that quarantines imposed from the outside generally don't work, because they're almost impossible to enforce, and that's certainly the case. If you try to put a ring around West Africa, people will get through unless you just completely lock people in, which isn't physically possible. You are not going to be able to stop people, including eventually a few cases to come. But it's extremely unlikely that these cases will turn into outbreaks. Extremely, extremely unlikely.
Do you see a tension in the global community between outsiders wanting to lock this down externally and rational insiders who see that a different approach has to be taken?
Well, there's two kinds of disconnects. One is between this kind of popular perception that it's hard to understand, panicking, and we should just put the monster back in a box and throw away the key and throw it into the sea. And of course, any responsible public health official or worker knows that that's simply not possible. But there's also another kind of disconnect. It's a disconnect between people who are familiar with public health and working on this response and coming up with solutions, and the people on the inside, and by that I mean people living in villages and urban neighborhoods in West Africa. And as I said, quarantine from the outside never works, although it's always the solution that people cling to. But the thing that does work is quarantine from the inside and a host of other solutions. But the disconnect that's happening is also within the public health community between all these outsiders who think they have solutions and want people to do what they're told, which is not generally how people function, and the fact that in West Africa, and it's happening, we're seeing it directly, I've seen it myself, where some communities are managing to stop Ebola. And what we have to do is learn from those communities, because they have something that none of us have.
Describe through your eyes what you've seen, villages empowered to deal with this on their own, even though they are walking amongst the infected.
Well, for example, in one village that I went to, they described how they got a few cases, and particularly all the staff in their clinic. They had 7 staff in the clinic, and all of them were infected, and only one survived. And several people in the village were infected as well. And what the villagers concluded was that they needed to kind of protect themselves from the outside world and also make sure that there was no further contamination within the village. So after a learning period, which unfortunately involves some transmission of the disease, they understood that nobody could touch somebody who was sick. They could give them food. They could give them water. They tried to refer them to treatment. They did refer some people to treatment. They also stopped outsiders coming in. And what they did it is they did it on their own terms, and with their own solutions. And, for example, they didn't stop people from actually making contact with the village, but they had the visitors who wanted to meet someone stay on the main road that went through the village, sit on a chair, and then they brought somebody, the person that that visitor wanted to talk to, and place that chair 3 feet away. And that way they could have the conversation, they could have the exchange that's part of the tradition, but at the same time, no physical contact would happen. And when I visited that village, they had been 2 weeks without a case.
Brilliant. I mean, you know, simple, rational solution. So how do you compare what's going on in that village that you've seen with this unraveling that seems to be taking place down in Dallas?
Well, unfortunately, the unraveling that we're seeing in Dallas is something that we've also seen in West Africa, and particularly in Monrovia and now in Freetown. And it's understandable because Ebola is a scary disease, and we've all had movies and other things that have primed us to think of it as much more transmissible than it actually is.
And on that note right there, can you inoculate us intellectually for the political rhetoric that we're going to be hearing between now and Election Day here in the United States on this issue of Ebola?
Well, if I had that vaccine, I think that would be even more difficult to obtain than the vaccine against Ebola itself.
but what should we think when we hear the kinds of rhetoric that we're going to be hearing?
We should think that there's a long tradition of politicians and preachers, any other kind of populists and demagogues, exploiting crisis to their own end, but creating a lot of harm in the process. I hope here that people will be responsible. The CDC is giving messages that are scientifically correct and that make sense, but the CDC doesn't have the ability to spread messages and the reach in the media that journalists have and that politicians have. So I think it's really important that journalists and politicians be educated and be educating about Ebola.
Dr. Emmanuel Darcourt is Senior Health Director for the International Rescue Committee, back from West Africa, talking about infections of Ebola politically as well as on the ground in West Africa. Doctor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.